and welcome to your outlet for outdoors and Western lifestyle news, The Bend Show. I am your host, Rebecca Warner, a.k.a. Beck. We say this each and every week. We love hearing from you, your comments, stories, ideas. Get a hold of us anytime. Call or text 305-900-2363. Again, that's 305-900-2363. Or you can always drop an email to bendradioshow@gmail.com. Ryan Long, as always, is my producer and co-host, Jeff Tigger Earhart. I just got to say, are we ready for old man winter to be behind us? Because I know some of you, especially in the Northeast and the Southeast, I'm going to focus on the Southeast part of the country because you're coming out of what I just heard the other day. You came out of some cold weather that you haven't had since the 1960s.
Dumb.
I know.
I'm just going to speak on behalf of everybody in Florida, North Carolina, and everywhere down there. It's dumb.
You know, think
about
this.
Is it okay for all of us to have spring fever now, Beck? Is that allowed? I know you give me the Dickens every year. Is that okay after the cold blast that everybody, that millions and millions of people have gone through? Is it okay now?
All I can say is I think those of us that are getting the itch to maybe build our new homes in the next coming year are probably rethinking our house plans because you're living in areas
location
might be part of it. You may be thinking, you know, building a new home, you know, think about
Geothermal. Shouses
and barndominiums are kind of the rage these days.
That is kind of the hot thing, especially in the Southeast.
Yes.
I follow a lot of people on Facebook, a lot of builders on Facebook, because we're kind of all about the shouse thing. That's what we'd like to do in the barndominium. And there are some absolutely gorgeous homes, barndominiums, I guess, in that part of the country. But now I said geothermal heat. Probably need to be in there.
Well, what I'm thinking about, though, is how many of you down in those areas that have went through, whether it's been over the last couple of weeks, ice storms, you've hit record temps that maybe you haven't seen since 1994, I've heard. Those were the last time you hit those temps. Other areas, like I said, the 1960s. Now, as you look at building your new home, are you rethinking and going, insulation isn't such a bad thing. Maybe where I'm putting my pipes, maybe where I'm going to reassess and talk with my builder. I may be talking with people up in the northern parts of the country and reassessing my plans.
I guarantee there's a lot of people listening that are saying, yeah, whatever, Beck, building a new home. In your dreams.
All right. Well, if nothing else, if you haven't booked your tickets for spring break, you're going, am I heading far enough south?
That's the second one. How many people are saying spring break? What? Did you go on a spring break when you were in college, when you were wild and woolly?
Are you kidding me? I'm a ranch kid. It's called calving season.
Exactly. I didn't even come close to spring break. In fact, your folks were the same as mine. They were chomping at the bit when I was done with exams or whatever it was at that time of year to come home and
we were calving heifers. It was always calving heifers over spring break. And you know, mom and dad, I'm sure were same with you. Who got to do the midnight checks? You and I, right?
No, mine was 2 a.m.
2 a.m.?
2 a.m. was
did
up
you
first.
Get to go out to a party and stay? Well, I guess we were in college. We got to go out a little late.
That was the cool thing, though, that if, you know, and even like in high school, my folks would let me stay out a little bit later if I took that check. See what I mean? Curfew was a little bit later, but I needed to be home at that time to go and check at that particular time. So I could stay out and party a little bit.
Oh, look at you. I had to be home at midnight and do that check and then stay awake and still do the 2 a.m. check.
I didn't have to be home till 2.
Anyway, all right, we're going to spin into the news, okay? First story is going to take us to Utah. Utah wildlife managers have launched a 3-year study that involves culling mountain lions in 6 game management units to see whether reducing cougar numbers will help struggling mule deer herds. While the goal is more deer on the landscape, many of Utah's houndsmen say the plan puts their dogs, their livelihoods, and the future of lion hunting at risk. State biologists say cougar predation is exceeding sustainable levels in parts of Utah, with some units seeing more than 8%, and in some cases, double-digit deer losses to lions. The study focuses on Boulder, Monroe, Stansbury, Pine Valley, Wasatch, East and Zion units, where state-run trapping efforts are now being added on top of already legal year-round lion hunting. That's where the concern comes in for houndsmen and from hunters. The Utah Houndsmen Association opposes the study, warning that state-set traps and snares create dangerous conditions for hounds and discourages outfitters from turning dogs loose. Houndsmen are asking the state to release trap location maps so they can hunt safely and continue doing the hands-on ethical predator management they've provided for generations. Supporters of the study, including several major conservation groups, say the data is needed. Mule deer have been collared across the study units, and early observations show poor body condition in some animals. Funding for the research is coming from sportsman-driven organizations, and some groups are taking a wait-and-see approach before judging the results. Critics of predator management argue that habitat loss and winter severity are the real problems behind deer declines. But state officials point out that while habitat issues affect much of Utah, roughly 30% of the state appears to be dealing with a true predator-driven top-down problem, something the legislature has directed wildlife managers to address. For houndsmen, the bigger issue may be perception. At a time when lion hunting faces pressure across the West, they worry this study could hand ammunition to anti-hunting groups and further threaten a tradition built around trained dogs, fair chase, and hands-on conservation. The debate puts Utah's houndsmen squarely in the middle, supporting healthy deer herds and sound science, while fighting to protect their dogs, their way of life, and the future of cougar hunting. I find this story fascinating. I am somebody who has always wanted to go on an outfitter-led hunt myself. So I
with hounds, are you talking?
Yes. Oh, I've okay. always wanted to
I
do
didn't
this.
I know that about you.
Yes,
you
it's on
do?
My bucket list. So I'm actually very intrigued. And if you have gone on one of these hunts, I would love to hear about this. So please shoot me an email to benradioshow@gmail.com.
You know, there's a lot to this story that you have in there. The first part is about how some of the houndsmen are saying that the maps and locations of these traps should be released, that
Absolutely.
They're still out there. I totally agree with that 1,000%. But it's kind of that classic, we have the outdoor conservationists like us, like hunters, like the houndsmen. And then you have on the other side, you have somebody else. And it doesn't matter if it's cougars in Utah, if it's wolves in Colorado. I mean, these are very, very, very hot topics amongst not just the hunters, but landowners, land users, and land managers as well.
So again, what are your thoughts on this? Give us a shout. That email one more time was benradioshow@gmail.com. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to The Ben Show. We'll be back right after this.
The hunt, the stories, the memories. This is Jake Fenrick with JB's Wildlife Designs. Let me capture and preserve that hunt, that story, that memory with a trophy mount to last you a lifetime. Look us up on Facebook at JB's Wildlife Designs to see samples of our taxidermy and reach out at any time with any and all questions you may have. This is Jake Fenrick with JB's Wildlife Designs. Taxidermy is my passion. Let me preserve yours.
The Red Angus outfit with everything you need, Wassum Red Angus. 70 elite Red Angus bulls and 130 of those highly sought after commercial open heifers. Mark the date Thursday, February 19th, Richardton, North Dakota. Sale info available at ranchchannel.com and wassumredangus.com.
Is there that particular pair of boots or that shirt or pair of jeans that you just can't find anywhere else? Check out Medora Boot and Western Wear. Medora Boot and Western Wear is the go-to for boots, jeans, especially jackets, and even those hard-to-find accessories that make perfect gifts. Check out MedoraBoot.com, or better yet, give Kim a call at 701-623-1005 and tell Kim that Tigger and Beck sent you. For the latest in Western and outdoor practical and fashionable wear, there is only one, Medora Boot and Western Wear.
It's super easy to get a hold of Beck, and we want to hear any story that you may have or just what's happening around your bend. 305-900-2363. That's the hotline. Leave a message. Send a text. 305-900-2363.
Welcome back to The Ben Show. All right, Tigger, what's up? You got your hand in the air.
I want to play a little game, true or fake. If this story is true or if it's AI generated, because we're all seeing all of this stuff over especially social media, that is it true or is it AI generated and pictures and videos and all this kind of stuff. Okay.
All right. What's caught your eye?
I have a story for you. You tell me if this is true or if this is AI generated. And I picked this story specifically because it's about a gal that they call Rattlesnake Kate.
Oh, of
course.
You're
going to love this one. Okay. Takes place in Colorado. The date on October 28th, 1925. Catherine McHall Slaughterback rode into legend. Near Hudson, Colorado, she and her son encountered a rattlesnake migration. Reason for it is the day before duck hunters were out hunting, she was hoping to pick up some duck carcasses left behind. However, with only three bullets and a no hunting sign, she fought off the rattlesnake migration in numbers of up to 140 snakes to protect her child. Her dress was soaked in venom. She returned home dragging the carcasses behind her. The press dubbed her Rattlesnake Kate, and her story became folklore, a tale of maternal instinct, frontier grit, and fearless defiance. In fact, that there is a dress made out of rattlesnake skins that hangs in a museum in Greeley, Colorado.
Why is it I have a feeling this one's not going to be fake?
So is this true or is this AI generated? In fact, I even have a little picture over here that you should put on the show notes at the website.
Do I have to?
Yeah.
Do I have to? Because
yeah.
I'm purposely not looking at your screen right now because I know I'll have nightmares if I look.
So is this true or AI generated?
Oh my gosh, I can't even look at
that. Is it true or is it AI generated?
I'm going to, in my dreams tonight, tell myself that it's not true.
It's true.
God.
It's true. The legend of Rattlesnake Kate. And now I'm sure it's been embellished a little bit. Now this picture I'm looking at, it's not exactly 140 snakes, but a whole pile of them right there.
Okay, I don't know.
Yes, there is a dress in a museum in Greeley, Colorado that is made out of snake skins.
Okay, I am Googling the dress, and I can handle looking at the dress. There is a dress. I can tell you that much. So that part of the story, at least, is true. I'm not going to look at your screen of all the snakes that I... No, I'm not looking over at your screen. So could you find a better story? Come on.
So is this true or is this AI generated? The year is 2014. Jeremiah Heaton, a dad from Virginia, found out about a strip of unclaimed land in Northeast Africa. It was a barren patch between Egypt and Sudan. No nation wanted it due to a border dispute. So what did he do? He flew there, planted a flag, declared it the Kingdom of North Sudan, naming his 7-year-old daughter as princess.
No.
Now, it wasn't a joke. He filed paperwork, launched a website, and even tried to establish agricultural partnerships. So is this true or is this AI generated?
That's got to be AI generated.
This is absolutely true. Absurd.
What?
Yes. But it's kind of a sweet gesture, I guess. But what little girl doesn't deserve a sovereign micronation? Come on.
A micronation? Like, how big was it? Like, the size of just you could put a pole in it?
Very, very small patch of land.
Oh, my gosh. That is the cutest thing. But I guess you can, like, name a star after somebody.
There you go. You can pick a star. So, yes, this one is true. Is this story true or is this story AI generated? We're going to go back to the year of 1979, where NASA's Skylab space station re-entered Earth's atmosphere and broke apart. Debris scattered across Western Australia, including onto a farmstead owned by a man by the name of David Darnell. Now, NASA didn't respond when he reached out, extremely annoyed. So Darnell decided to take them to small claims court. He actually ended up winning in small claims court after suing NASA. They owed him $400 for littering. NASA eventually paid in part to stop the story from becoming a bigger PR disaster, but it remains one of the pettiest and most satisfying legal wins in history. So the moral of the story, sometimes a little guy wins, especially when the debris is literally from space. Is this true or is this AI generated?
It's got to be true.
Absolutely. This deal is true. Yes, he did sue NASA for $400 and they eventually paid up.
That is funny. I bet his lawyer fees were more than that.
Exactly. Okay, you ready for the next one?
I'm ready.
Okay, what happens when a festival robot decides it's had enough of human interaction? Well, attendees at a Chinese festival found out the hard way when a robot lost control and began attacking people. Security had to intervene immediately, and while organizers downplayed the incident as a simple robot failure, it raised serious concerns. Now, as AI-powered machines become integrated into daily life, questions about safety and human oversight become more pressing. Where do we draw the line between AI autonomy and human control? And more importantly, how do we prevent our future robot assistants from turning into real-life sci-fi nightmares? Is this story true or is this story AI generated?
I don't know. This story sounds like a scene out of the movie I, Robot. I'm going to say this movie is fake.
Absolutely true.
What?
This is a true story.
What?
And the organizers and experts say that this incident was due to technical malfunction and not a malicious decision by AI.
We even have a friend who has a robot and he even used it as part of his security for his office.
Is that Marlo that has it?
Yeah, Marlo Anderson, the founder of National Day Calendar. He uses a robot to watch his office.
And does security?
Yeah, that's who he uses for his security. It roams around and monitors.
So it's like a little Roomba?
Kind of, yeah. It's a little bigger than a Roomba, and it takes photos, and it even helps when people come in and they want to buy merchandise and says hello.
And Marlo is a big one that comes out and says, you should not be afraid of AI.
Oh, very much so.
You need to start using it. And he says you should actually spend time every day, just a few minutes, learning an AI platform because there's so many of them out there.
Yes.
All right, Beck, true or AI generated? We're going to call this one Mike the Headless Chicken.
Oh my God.
In 1945, a farmer by the name of Lloyd Olson decapitated a rooster that he had named Mike. But Mike's head wasn't fully gone. The axe missed his ear, his jugular vein, and a nostril, allowing the chicken to live for another 18 months, thus becoming a sideshow attraction.
Wait.
True or AI generated?
Chickens have ears? What am I missing here?
Apparently.
I'm thinking about chickens here. A nostril
that
and a
could
ear?
Maybe be a hint of, is it true or AI generated?
This has got to be AI generated.
Absolutely true.
I have helped my aunt. 100%
true.
Okay, I was going to.
Don't you remember, like, if you butchered chickens as a kid and you take the head off and they chase you?
Yes!
Hours and hours. Maybe not for 18 months, but yeah.
Well, I was going to say.
No, the chicken went on to live for 18 months. And yes, was a sideshow attraction named Mike. So I'm going to echo what Marlo had told us, that AI should not be scary. And you know what the moral of the story is on this whole thing that I went through?
And what would that be?
Everything that Beck and the T-Man talk about episode after episode is absolutely true. Boom!
On that note, we're going to throw this to break, folks. You're listening to The Ben Show. We'll be back right after this. You've waited, dreamt of a hunting adventure, and now have harvested that trophy of a lifetime. Keep the memory alive with a custom-designed mount preserved as a work of art. Check out our approved taxidermist. Depending on your location, the award-winning Schneider Taxidermy is located in Helena, Montana. When hunting the Dakotas, JB's Wildlife Designs in Mandan, North Dakota, then Shadron Creek Taxidermy in Nebraska, and for the Central USA, Little Rack Taxidermy in Macomb, Illinois. Reach out to The Ben Show and let us help you find the right taxidermist.
Make the right choice with Schnabel Ranch Simmentals and Lazy J Bar Ranch. Simmentals, Semangus, and Red Angus, bulls and heifers with genomics on every critter. Schnabel Ranch Simmentals and Lazy J Bar Ranch, Saturday, February 21st at Hub City Livestock in Aberdeen, South Dakota. All sale information available at ranchchannel.com.
Hey guys and gals, this is John Armand with Ultimate Outdoor Adventures TV. Ultimate Outdoor Adventures TV travels the back roads to the backwaters in pursuit of the ultimate adventure in hunting and fishing. Join Team UOA every week for exciting action in the crosshairs of the outdoors. Catch Ultimate Outdoor Adventures TV on YouTube, Amazon Prime, and make sure to follow Team UOA on Facebook and Instagram to share in the ultimate outdoor adventure.
Welcome back to the Ben Show. Since the beginning of the year, Tigger and I have been on the road actually quite a bit. Back in January, we were able to head to Denver and take in the National Western Stock Show. I'm bringing this up because what it brings back to me when I think about showing, I think about these big events, it reminds me that it's always important to keep FFA and 4-H at the forefront of our thoughts. And I'm bringing this up now because in just a few months, some of you may be deciding, should I enroll my kids this summer into 4-H?
Yes.
Should I think about this next summer, fall, getting them into FFA?
Yes.
And I'm telling you, I absolutely 100% am with Tigger. I was not in FFA because our school wasn't big enough to offer it. However, I was in 4-H. And looking back, Tigger and I, for those of you that don't know, that's a lot of times our give back is especially around these youth organizations and getting them involved in agriculture. But I just thought I'd bring it up because sometimes people forget and they look at the youngest generation coming up and you're going, what can I do to improve or instill some of those values that we had growing up? And these two organizations, to me, I don't know about you, Tigger, but they keep coming to the forefront.
Some of the best memories that I have is of 4-H. I pledge my head to clearer thinking, my heart to greater loyalty, my hands to larger service, and my health to better living for my club, my community, my country, and my world.
Very nicely put.
Sorry, I had to cough there. And don't ask me to recite the FFA creed. I can't do that. I was the Sentinel? No, I was the vice president.
And you don't think you can remember that one?
I can remember, why is the president so stationed by the plow? The plow is a symbol of labor and tillage of our soil. Without labor, neither knowledge nor wisdom can accomplish.
Okay, we're going to just let you go.
I don't remember all that. That's been the sunny slopes long ago. But yes, some of my greatest memories and some of the best friends that I have today is because of 4-H and FFA. And I guarantee you that a lot of people listening, it's the same.
You know, I agree too, because a lot of times I run into folks and now, I mean, Tigger and I haven't been in school in not just years, decades, okay? But it's amazing how many people I will come across and they'll say, gosh, I know you from somewhere. And then immediately I usually start listing off, was it 4-H? Was it summer camp? Was it, see what I'm saying? You're networking. And I think it's really important for these youth growing up to be doing the same thing, not realizing they're networking, but starting at a young age and getting them off their phones all the time.
And 4-H and FFA has really changed in the last few years because it's not about cows and sows that people think of. I mean, they have really expanded so much of projects. It kind of amazes me. In fact, it's quadrupled in the amount of specialties, areas of interest maybe is the best way to describe it in both 4-H and FFA. And I want to share this story. In my hometown where I grew up, I don't know how that Mr. Faring did this, the FFA advisor and the vocational agriculture instructor, if they still call it VOAG. But FFA has turned into the cool thing for the kids to do. In a small community that I grew up in, that they have more kids going out for FFA than they do for football, for wrestling, for basketball. And I'm from a school that was known for all those sports. It's cool to be in FFA. In fact, the majority of the kids are town kids that are in FFA. How neat is that?
That right there was what I was going to hit on, because I've been looking across the statistics on many different states and looking at rural communities, and not just rural, but also urban communities. 4-H FFA has gone through the roof with enrollment and those signing up, because you're absolutely right. It's no longer a farm and ranch kid anymore. They're actually seeking out these, they want to call them experiences that you can learn from.
Special interest, maybe. I don't know exactly
how to describe
that.
But think about this. Here's my last little plug, because I feel like we should really be getting our focuses and getting involved. And that is, remember, this is a great way for these youth to learn leadership, communication, resilience.
Ooh.
Think about that word.
Oh.
Resilience.
And actually learn how to talk these days.
Yes, professional development. Learn how to prepare for college and careers. Then also your character. It builds character in one another.
And you make the best friends of your life.
You really do, and you will always have memories. So check out both those organizations if you have a chance or you're considering it. I'm telling you, reach out. If you want more information, we'll hit you up with the right stuff. You can send an email to bendradioshow@gmail.com. We're going to call this show wrapped, folks. Like I say this each week, if you have anything spot-worthy we need to share, please send it our way. That number you can call or text anytime, 305-900-2363. Again, 305-900-2363. Or you can always email bendradioshow@gmail.com. And if you missed part of this episode or want to hear past shows, you can head to the website, thebendshow.com. And be sure to subscribe to your favorite podcasting app or head to the Bend Show YouTube channel. Finally, a big thanks to all of you listeners that came along. And whether you're coming or going today, stay with us as we ranch it up. And remember to keep up with me, Beck, all week long by following The Bend on Facebook and on Instagram at The Bend Show. This is Rebecca Warner. Catch Beck if you can next week on The Bend.